So we will get started with the Commonwealth Appeal, Commonwealth versus Holcutt. Ms. Johnson, we're ready for you when you are.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Victoria Johnson for the Commonwealth, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, ma'am, 3 minutes.
Thank you very much. This Court should reverse the Circuit Court's judgment because Deputy Parrish's decision to tow and impound Holcutt's car was objectively reasonable under the circumstances and was consistent with Hanover County's policy. Furthermore, Holcutt has no right to remove items from the car prior to it being towed. To my first point, the policy here does allow for some discretion in deciding when to tow a car. That's at Appendix 106 in the paragraph headed Discretionary Action. And I hate to read to the Court, but I think that this is a really important point. The policy reads, there may be limiting or mitigating circumstances where the exercise of discretion would indicate that towing is in the best interest of the driver and the department. And this is not some kind of an untrammeled discretion that the court's jurisprudence has forbade. Instead, this discretion is kind of informed by the rest of the policy. And a reasonable and intelligent police officer could decide whether to tow the car based on reading the rest of the policy.
Ms. Johnson, excuse me, this is Judge Huff. In what way would you say that this was in the best interest of the force and of the automobile owner to have the vehicle towed when it was on private property? No complaints had been made about the car being there. And so it was not impeding traffic, et cetera. How do you get to best interest?
Well, I think that by looking at the rest of the policy and looking at paragraphs 4G, 4H, and 4I of the policy, which are at Appendix 107 and 108, provides for towing unattended and abandoned vehicles. 4I provides that private property owners may have a car towed and simultaneously notify an officer. And I think that in this situation, it was objectively reasonable for the officer to go ahead and have the car towed because, as pointed out in the record and on brief, this car was not drivable at this point. This car had had its license plates removed. So the decision to go ahead and tow it, rather than leaving it in this lot, an undrivable car, in a private parking lot for an indeterminate amount of time, is an objectively reasonable decision. Police officers are allowed to make objectively reasonable kind of judgment calls, and the Fourth Circuit has noted in one of the cases that I cited in my brief that police departments and counties can't be expected to foresee every possible permutation that can happen involving a vehicle and when a vehicle needs to be towed. And that's why there's some discretion allowed under the Fourth Amendment in these kinds of cases. Because ultimately, the officer that's kind of on the street has to make that determination. And the question is whether, you know, not whether there was a reason to tow the car, as this court and I believe as the Fourth Circuit has also said, it's not whether there's a reason to tow the car, it's whether doing so is objectively reasonable in the circumstances. And in this
Counsel, to the extent that you relied on paragraph 2 of the policy, how are you bound as the appellant? Where was it preserved in the record that the prosecutor argued about paragraph 3?
Let me look at paragraph 3 just to make sure. Paragraph 2, the legal authority bit.
Right.
If you bear with me, Your Honor, I apologize. Let me see if I can put my finger on that. I do believe that I saw that argument, and I apologize for the delay. I should have my finger right on that.
That's okay, Counsel. I don't want to eat up your time.
I apologize. No, I should know. I believe it was –
Counsel, don't worry. Go ahead with your argument.
I apologize, and
if
I would
it's
be
in the
happy
record,
to submit that. I'd be happy
no,
to submit that to the court.
If it's in the record, we'll find it. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Your Honor. I apologize. And moving along, Your Honors, I think that that's what informs the officer's decision there, is that this car was very like other towing situations that are listed in the policy, and furthermore, the fact that this car did not have insurance and it could not be legally driven. And moving towards my second point, the defendant did not have a right to remove items from the car under the Fourth Amendment. The Supreme Court of the United States addressed a similar issue in Berting, which is cited on brief. And in that case, the question was whether the defendant had the chance to, had, whether the officers were required to give the defendant a chance to make alternative arrangements for his car itself. And the Supreme Court of the United States held, of course, that it was not. And then other courts, including the Ninth Circuit in Penn, held that kind of reasoning extends to belongings inside the car. And again, as far as opening containers and what have you, the court in Penn and pointed towards the policy itself. And here, the handover policy allows opening all closed containers and requires a complete vehicle inventory. And as pointed out in the cases that I cited on brief, the policy behind the inventory search would be invalidated if officers had no record of what was actually contained in various containers in the car. And so as the second point, Your Honor, the Commonwealth contends that there was just no right to take things away out of the car. If the court has questions, I'm happy to answer them.
I have no questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Mr. Polk?
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Matt Polk, and I'm speaking to you today on behalf of Hunter Hocut. If y'all could see me right now, you would see me smiling because I am very unaccustomed to being in the position of the appellee in a criminal case in y'all's court. I'll apologize if my argument is somewhat disjointed. I'm usually the appellant.
We understand, counsel.
The issue in this case simply is whether Deputy Parrish's inventory search of Hocut's car violated the Fourth Amendment, and it did for three reasons. First, Parrish's impoundment of the car was unlawful. Second, that impoundment and subsequent search was not conducted, pursuant to the Hanover County Sheriff's Department's policy on towing and impounding. And lastly, that impoundment and search of Hocut's car, in light of all the facts and circumstances of this case, was nothing more than a surrogate for an improper investigative motive. First, I think it's worth mentioning what perhaps has become axiomatic, and that is that the inventory search is a function of the community caretaking doctrine. It is not an investigative tool. As to the lawfulness of the impoundment of Mr. Hocut's car, this doctrine, this community caretaking function in the context of the inventory search was first discussed in South Dakota versus Opperman. And in that case, the United States Supreme Court provided a couple of examples as to when an inventory search under the community caretaker doctrine would be appropriate. The first is vehicles that are damaged or disabled due to an accident, and second are vehicles that are in violation of parking ordinances or that are illegally parked. And in that context, one can appreciate the community caretaking function of the inventory search. Now, this court's decision, as I discussed in my brief, in King versus Commonwealth, is particularly relevant and insightful insofar as the case at bar is concerned. In King, the defendant was cited for reckless driving and driving on a suspended operator's license. The officer did not arrest Mr. King, but impounded his car for what he termed safekeeping. The police policy at issue in King provided that impoundment was, quote, highly recommended. And this court found that impoundment unlawful. And its analysis and its reasoning is instructive. The court pointed out at first that the officer's subjective view, and I'll use the Commonwealth's term, his discretion, his subjective view to leave a car, or rather to not leave a car in a particular location, does not substitute for objective facts that the public safety was at risk or that there was a need to safeguard the vehicle. And the court noted that Mr. King's car was legally parked. It did not obstruct the free flow of traffic. It did not pose a trespassory presence on private property. Furthermore, King was not taken into custody or removed from the scene. So he was available to remove the car, not necessarily to drive the car, but to remove the car to another location or to safeguard his property. And the court also pointed out that the officer in King made no inquiry whatsoever regarding King's ability to make arrangements for the car. Lastly, the court cautioned against reliance on cases in which a defendant is arrested and removed from the scene, as that person has no way to safeguard either his vehicle or its contents. Now, the case at bar is strikingly similar to King in that Hocut was also stopped on suspicion of driving on a suspended license, although he was not suspected of speeding, and it bears stating that ultimately the officer concluded that Hocut probably didn't know his license was suspended at the time he was driving his car. Now, unlike the policy at issue in King, the policy at issue in this case provides that towing should be avoided whenever practicable. Furthermore, like the car in King, there was no evidence that Mr. Hocut's car obstructed the free flow of traffic. There was no evidence that it posed a trespassory presence on private property or that it violated any parking ordinances. Moreover, like Mr. King, Hocut was not taken into custody or removed from the scene. He was at the scene, available to arrange for the removal of his car to another location or to safeguard his property in the car. Under this court's reasoning in King, therefore, Deputy Parrish did not lawfully impound Hocut's car, and the subsequent inventory search conducted by Parrish violated Hocut's rights under the Fourth Amendment.
Mr. Falk?
Ma'am.
Can I ask you a quick question about the standard? Assuming that the circuit court applied the wrong standard because it was assessing the need to impound the vehicle rather than determining whether impoundment was reasonable, do we then, as an appellate court, have to remand the case for the application of the proper standard?
No, Your Honor. This court, and I believe the case is, well, one case in particular, the answer to your question is no. This court can find that Judge Kelly reached the right result, albeit for the wrong reason. And one case I have at my disposal that references that doctrine is Banks versus Commonwealth, a Virginia Supreme Court case decided in 2010. So if this court finds that somehow the judge applied the wrong standard but reached the right result, it can and should affirm the trial court's decision. I will, however, point out to you, Judge Decker, that the judge characterized part of her ruling, I guess, as the rightfulness or propriety of impounding Hocut's car. And I would suggest to this court that that is akin to the first prong of the test, the lawfulness of impounding Hocut's car. Because as the Commonwealth pointed out, and I would readily agree, reasonableness is the linchpin in this analysis. And so I think when the trial court said it was improper or unnecessary, however the judge phrased it, to impound the car, that was tantamount to finding that the Commonwealth had not proven that the impoundment was lawful. Granted, it wasn't as clean an analysis, perhaps, as you'll find in appellate case law, but that's what I think the judge was getting at. In its brief, the Commonwealth's sole basis for concluding the impoundment of Hocut's car was lawful was this proposition that the car was unsafe to operate. And in analyzing that particular issue, the Commonwealth cited Fisher and Fauntleroy. Reliance on both of those cases is misplaced. There are several distinctions between this case and both Fisher and Fauntleroy to bear that out. First, Fisher contains several important distinctions. First, Fisher's car was parked in an area that required a decal, and his car did not have one. Additionally, the officer knew from personal experience that if such a car was parked in that lot, it would be towed. Second, the car Fisher was operating was potentially unsafe, as was evidenced by his admission that the car had been rejected, and he had removed the inspection sticker after receiving multiple citations. And lastly, the policy, the police policy relating to towing and inventory searches at issue in Fisher provided that impoundment was proper for defective equipment. In Fauntleroy, that case also involved an unsafe vehicle related specifically to the inspection sticker. In that case, however, rather than the removed sticker, Fauntleroy's car displayed a fraudulent sticker. Additionally, he parked his car in the middle of the road, and due to the fraudulent inspection sticker, his car could not be driven away. Now, Hocut's case is readily distinguishable from those two cases on a variety of factual points. First, the policy at issue in this case did not authorize the impoundment of Hocut's car. None of the scenarios outlined in the Hanover County Sheriff's Department's policy applied to either the operation of Mr. Hocut's car or the condition of the car or where the car was parked. It didn't fit into any situation addressed by the statute, or by the policy, rather, unlike in Fisher. Secondly, there was no evidence adduced by the Commonwealth that Hocut's car was parked illegally or in a restricted area. As the trial judge noted, Deputy Parrish never bothered asking the custodian of the Fastmart property whether Hocut's car could remain there until Hocut could arrange for its removal. Hocut's car was not impeding traffic, as was the car in Fauntleroy, and his operation of the car and the car itself did not render that car or its operation unsafe. At most, and this I think is an interesting point raised by the Commonwealth, at most the evidence adduced by the Commonwealth at the suppression hearing established that Hocut's Toyota was uninsured. However, driving an uninsured car standing alone is neither illegal nor unsafe. And the Commonwealth makes much about Hocut's license suspension for insurance monitoring. This argument is a red herring. A person can drive an uninsured car all day long, so long as that person pays the $500 uninsured motorist fare or uninsured motor vehicle fee. If a person represents at the time they register a car that the car is insured, they must prove that fact if requested to by DMV. And if they fail to prove the car is insured after being requested to do so by DMV, their license can be suspended for insurance monitoring. Now, the Commonwealth never adduced any evidence at the suppression hearing that Hocut did not pay the uninsured motor vehicle fee for the Toyota he was driving when stopped by Deputy Parrish. They are making this jump that because Hocut's license, and I say they, I mean the Commonwealth, was making the jump that because Hocut's license was suspended for insurance monitoring, ergo the Toyota was not capable of being driven, and Parrish was justified in removing the car's plates. And that's just not the case. The Commonwealth either had to, the Commonwealth needed to adduce evidence, and it did not, that Hocut did not pay the uninsured motorist or uninsured motor vehicle fee, or it needed to prove that the car at issue for the insurance monitoring suspension was the Toyota. Without proof of either of those two facts, this argument that he was uninsured and the Toyota was uninsured, and he was suspended for insurance monitoring, loses all of its it's searching for the word, it loses all of its efficacy, if you will, or its cogency. Additionally, Parrish's impoundment and inventory search of the vehicle was not conducted pursuant to standard police procedures. That is, pursuant to the Hanover County Sheriff's Department's policy on towing. Firstly, in paragraph 2 of the policy's procedure section, entitled Legal Authority, the policy provides, quote, owner slash driver must be given the opportunity to arrange for the disposition of his vehicle unless the officer is acting under statutory authority to seize the vehicle or it's being seized as evidence of a crime. And neither was the case in our case. The only statutes the Commonwealth cites with respect to this notion of seizing the car pursuant to statute is 46.2707 and 711 subsection E. But as I mentioned, there was no evidence adduced at the suppression hearing that Hocut either operated his uninsured car without first paying the uninsured motor vehicle fee or that he operated his car without license plates. And those are the only two code sections the Commonwealth points to for the notion that somehow this car was being impounded pursuant to statute or as evidence of a crime. Paragraph 4 of the policy's procedure section entitled Towing Situation list, as I mentioned earlier, those situations that justify impoundment and towing. And Hocut's operation of his vehicle, the condition of the vehicle, where it was parked, none of those scenarios can be found amongst those listed in the policy. However, even if this court finds that towing was authorized under the policy, Parrish did not follow the policy's procedures for how that towing should be conducted. First and foremost, prior to towing a vehicle, and this is paragraph 5, again in the policy's procedures section, it's entitled Action. It says, quote, prior to towing a vehicle subject to this policy, the driver shall be afforded a reasonable opportunity, predicated on the circumstances, to provide for the removal of the vehicle within a reasonable length of time. So this idea, as the Commonwealth posits, that somehow it was unreasonable to think that Deputy Parrish should leave that vehicle there. Let's just assume for argument's sake, although I'm not at all conceding, that removal of the license plates was appropriate. Somehow leaving the car in the parking lot for, as the Commonwealth characterizes it, an indeterminate amount of time, that somehow that was unreasonable. Well, if the officer had simply walked into the store and asked the custodian of the property whether he or she would permit the car to remain in the lot in a parking space for a reasonable amount of time, as stated by the policy, and if that person, that custodian, had said no, we may be in a different position. But the bottom line is,
Mr. Park, excuse me, let me interfere. Interrupt, you are very close to the end of your time, so if you could wrap it up for us, I'd appreciate it.
Certainly, and I apologize without being there. I've got no red light to look to.
No, that's right.
I guess yellow. The bottom line is that none of the circumstances or none of the facts present in the cases cited by the Commonwealth, indeed the facts cited by this court in King, dictate that this impoundment was unlawful. Furthermore, the policy on which the impoundment was based and the guidelines contained therein were not followed by Deputy Parrish. And given all of the facts and circumstances in this case, the inescapable conclusion is that after finding a hypodermic needle cap, after finding a holster in the passenger compartment of this car, and given how the facts of this case played out, the inescapable conclusion is that Deputy Parrish was simply wanting to seize that car, wanting to inventory it, looking for evidence of a crime. And that's exactly what he did. However, in doing so, he violated Mr. Hocut's Fourth Amendment rights. Thank you
very much, sir. Ms. Johnson, you have 7 minutes remaining.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. To start, Your Honor, the officer did not find the holster and cap until after the inventory search had begun, so the appellee is incorrect to rely on those facts as a basis for an investigatory motive. On the contrary, there is no evidence in the record that the officer had any investigatory motive. In fact, he stated that he had no intent to arrest Mr. Hocut. He wasn't going to arrest him for driving suspended. He gave him the benefit of the doubt that he didn't know that he was, that his license was suspended. And for those reasons, there's no evidence of an investigatory intent in this case. And the trial court never reached that issue. Importantly, if a case is, if a decision is found to be for right for the wrong reason, it's important that under the Supreme Court's jurisprudence, and I think White, that the court does not need to make any further factual findings. Here the court hasn't made any factual findings that would support the notion that there was an investigatory motive for this search, or that the search was not conducted according to, the search itself was not conducted according to the policy. The only issue that the court reached was the first issue, whether the towing was lawful in and of itself. Because the court applied the wrong standard, the proper remedy would be to remand for trial. Here, this case is not like King. The King case involved a car that was operable. This case does not. Here, had the deputy allowed Mr. Hocut to drive away, the deputy would have been allowing Mr. Hocut to commit a Class 3 misdemeanor in his presence by driving along on the highway with an uninsured car. And it's plain from the record that Mr. Hocut had not cured the suspension by paying his insurance premium or the uninsured.
What would be wrong with leaving the car in the parking lot?
Well, as I referenced before, Your Honor, that was a judgment call made by a police officer and was informed by the rest of the policy. Had the officer left the car at the parking lot, it would be for an indeterminate amount of time until either Mr. Hocut or someone else could cure the insurance problem or pay the uninsured motorist fee, get license plates back on that car so it could be driven lawfully. And I submit that it's reasonable for the officer to believe that leaving, essentially abandoning an undrivable car on private property was not a reasonable choice, not a good choice to make for either Mr. Hocut or the police department.
Is that enough to get us around the finding of the court? The trial court found, this is at page 100 of the joint appendix, the court finds the Commonwealth failed to establish the need to tow the vehicle from the location of the stop.
Yes, Your Honor, because that finding is plainly wrong upon reading the policy, because the policy allows for that discretion. The policy allows for an officer to make the discretionary call to move a car, to tow a car, and the fact that the trial court may have found another option does not make the officer's decision wrong under the Fourth Amendment. There are always going to be judgment calls in Fourth Amendment cases. In this situation, Officer Parrish's judgment call was reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. Furthermore, this case is more like Fauntleroy and Fisher because of the lack of insurance and the lack of paying the uninsured motorist fee. In Fisher and in Fauntleroy, this court noted that the failure to maintain a proper inspection sticker is enough for an officer to reasonably conclude that a car is unsafe to operate. Here, similarly, Officer Parrish could conclude that this car was unsafe to operate because it lacked insurance. There was no indication that the suspension of the license had been cured by paying the uninsured motorist fee. And the officer had no way of knowing why the car was not insured. It's possible that the car was uninsurable for some reason. And Hocut's behavior implicates the same policies that this court discussed in Fisher and Fauntleroy. In those cases, this court talked about posing a danger to the public and posing and having disregard for the laws of the Commonwealth and for the safety of other drivers. The same issues are at issue here. While Mr. Hocut did not lack an inspection sticker and instead lacked insurance coverage, the officer could conclude that he was driving unlawfully and that there is a good possibility that his car was unsafe to operate. I believe in Fisher, the inspection had failed. The car had failed inspection because of an inoperable brake light. That's a small violation, but the court still concluded that a failure to have a valid inspection sticker indicated a problem with complying with the law and having a safe vehicle. And for those reasons, the Commonwealth submits that the trial court's decision was, some of the factual findings were plainly wrong, and the trial court's decision was contrary to law, and asked that the court reverse.
All right, very well. Thank you so much for your arguments today. The case is submitted, and you'll be hearing from us shortly.